Hey, it's 10 o'clock. Time to call this month's meeting of the Tarrant County 911 District Board of Managers in session at 10 a.m. Did I do that right? Start on, I'm learning. Please call the roll.
Yes, sir. Rick Brunson?
Here.
Robert Alton?
Here.
Audrey Inzko?
Present.
Welcome back.
Thank you. Nice to be back.
Robert Brooks?
Here.
Sam Hall?
Here.
Jonathan Ingles? Ray Richardson?
Here.
Elena Williamson?
Here.
And will you mind showing your camera for us, please? Thank you.
So we have quorum? Okay. Next, agenda announcements.
We do have an agenda announcement under, purchases over $150,000. Item number C, RN25018, AT&amp;T Dedicated Technician Contract. We're going to move that to the March Board of Managers meeting.
And I'm assuming that's is where I can talk about a future agenda announcement, where we're going to need to elect a new vice chair. Vice chair basically has two responsibilities. The first is to moderate the meetings when the chair is not here. And if they so choose, they can dictate where the meeting is held. So if we got a 10-day forecast that says that we're going to be snowed on the next Monday, the vice chair can say, okay, we're going to have this meeting at my office. So we will do that next month.
And the last agenda announcement is a proclamation for Yvonne Crum that has been passed around for board members to sign.
We will miss her.
We will miss her. She'll be here in a little bit.
Where is she?
She'll be here in a little bit.
Oh, so we can't cheer for her yet?
Not yet, not yet.
Okay. Next is the consent agenda. Do I hear a motion to approve the consent agenda?
Second.
Made by Chief Hall. Seconded by Ms. Inzko. Inzko. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion passes unanimously. Next, we have legislative update. Mr. Paxton?
Yes, sir. Morning. Since I briefed you last month, the legislature's starting to hit the ground running. In legislative terms, that means they're moving pretty slow right now. But, you know, last month I mentioned that the House had restructured several committees, including the Homeland Security and Public Safety Committee. That's the committee that most of our bills historically have gone through. Now it's merged with Veterans Affairs. I wanted to mention this in case in 2 months I'm briefing you and our bills go through a different committee. There is a standing subcommittee called Broadband Infrastructure and Telecommunications, and it fits under the House State Affairs Committee. And I just want you to be aware of it, like I said, in case in a couple of months I'm mentioning that and you're not, and you're wondering what's going on. Getting straight to our funding issue. So I know I sound like a broken record with the last few sessions. I have said that with the budget surplus and the makeup of this legislature, a fee increase, wireless fee increase, has had zero to little chance of passing. This session, we still have a big budget surplus. There is more of a recognition in the legislature that we need to do something for 911. And Senator Pete Flores from San Antonio, who's retired law enforcement, has kind of taken up the mantle for finding that solution. And what he has proposed, and he has not filed this yet, but he has the support of the Lieutenant Governor, which is absolutely critical, and several key members in the Senate, is rather than raising strict, just completely raising the fee from 50 cents to 75 cents, retroactively, or tying that 50 cent fee retroactively to the consumer price index. What that would do is, if the bill is enacted, would raise the fee to almost 75 cents, and then moving forward, it would include a formula so that every time that consumer price index raises, that fee is raised according to that formula. And that way, in 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, we're not coming back to the legislature and saying costs have gone up, our equipment costs have gone up, and our fee is back where it was 15 years ago. He has been talking to members of the Senate that we really need their support on, getting their support. I will know more later this week, but I expect that bill to be filed this week or next week. So it's a very, very different approach, but one that I think is more supported by the legislature.
So in essence, it's not a fee increase, it's a recognition of current economic conditions.
That's exactly right. And the legislature has done something like that in the past, so there's precedence for it.
Okay. Any other questions from the board? Okay, then I've got one last one.
Yes, sir.
It's my understanding that AT&T has filed with the appropriate authorities to shut down the traditional telephone network, and that there are assurances that were included in that filing that said you don't have to worry that people in their homes are going to lose a 911 service or telephone service because we have other features that are available. Has there been any discussions either in committees or wherever about?
I have not seen anything like that so far, but I'll keep my eyes open for it. But that has not come up. Any bills that I've seen, getting into bill tracking, the bills that I've seen, I've not seen any bills that would raise red flags for us. The vast majority of bills that I've seen, it related to us, and it's not directly targeted to us, has to do with getting rid of lobbyists for public entities. And it's not, again, it's not really targeted to entities like this one. It's more for cities and counties, but it, depending on what is passed, if one is passed, it could impact us. But that's, this has been a very light session in regard to bills that could affect us that have been filed so far. Now, the bill filing deadline is in about 3 weeks, so I expect a lot more bills to be filed in the coming weeks.
Okay. Any other questions? Thank you. Keep up good work.
Thank you. Thank you. Hopefully I can come back next month and tell you this thing's been filed and we have a lot of support.
Good. We'll look forward to that.
Thank you, Bill.
Next is the Executive Director Report.
Thank you. Your monthly statistics for public education, analytics, safety smart rally schedule for the 2025 school year. I know that you've asked for the 25-26 school year. She's working on that, Mr. Brunson. Are on pages 23 through 29, and this includes our monthly call volumes and all training done in the month of January. Any questions about those analytics? On page 30 is 911 goes to Austin. I've been doing this, I cannot tell you how many years, every other year of 911 goes to Austin. And this past year, back February 3rd, was the best one ever. The education platform that they did in the very beginning for people who had never been, the talking points, we did exercises and scenarios of going up and introducing yourself and what to expect when you get in the offices. If the representative is not there, the talking to their chiefs of staff or their staff members, and just getting your foot in the door. Anil and I, we were able to hit all but two of our representatives, if I think I'm correct here. Some we had appointments with, some we just walked in, but their staffs were so welcoming. It was almost just all of a sudden they were ready to listen. And we were able to sit down. It was Anil and I, Flynn from Motorola, Eric Caddy from Geocom, and that was our little team. And every single answer they asked us, one of us knew the answer, whether it was technical, whether it was legislative or regulatory, or just about the district itself, or if it was about money. We were a great team. We didn't know it going in, but once we got in, we were the perfect storm. Our very first meeting was with Terry Meza, and the first thing she said was, "I'm sorry, but you're not in my district." And I was like, "Oh, yes, ma'am, DFW Airport, DFW Airport, Irving and Grand Prairie are in our 911 district." And she said, "Really?" So we did a little education, and we actually learned that DFW is the only airport that has three cemeteries in it. And her family is in one of those cemeteries. So she gave us an education. I brought her chief of staff in, which we did not think we were going to get to meet with. And he asked for more information, and she said if we need to find someone to carry our bill on the House side, that they would be happy to do that. And then I think you remember two years ago we went up to Tinderholt.
Yes.
His team offered to co-sponsor.
Oh, wonderful.
I'm telling you, it was just magical. I don't know what we did different. I don't know if we were just more relaxed this time or that we felt more confident in what we were doing and that passion, but it was just a great experience. So with that, the governor in the very front of your book is the state of Texas, Texas Senate. And it wasn't just us. On the second day of Now One Goes to Austin, we all came back and did our lessons learned and talked about our experiences that we had going to the Capitol. And that's when Tony Dunn, who was the chair over Now One Goes to Austin this year, let us know that the governor has said that February 3rd is thereby recognized as 911 Day at the Capitol. So we had a great time. I felt like we left a lot of education around. This was probably our biggest group. We filled a whole meeting room, and everybody had somebody to go with, and we tried to take those that had never been, making sure that they were paired up with people who had been. And we even heard that there were people still doing meetings late into Tuesday. So it was very rewarding, I've got to say. Next 2 years from now, y'all got to go. It's just a great experience. Any questions on Now One Goes to Austin?
No, but congratulations, Glenda, on a good trip to Oz.
Thank you, sir. Our Board of Managers staff action update, you had asked me to get with Kim Ward in Galveston County to see how they work their fee structure. And
for trunks,
and her mom's been ill, and I have not been able to do that, so I asked for some grace in making sure that we bring that back in March.
And as a reminder, the reason why I asked for that is when we look at our monthly statistics, our number for trunks, given the size of the district and the number of major employers that we have, it's off the mark. We are losing money somewhere, and I think it's primarily because people have moved to voice over IP mm-hmm. and are using data trunks mm-hmm. and pumping that traffic over to 911. And my perspective is if it hits 911, you need to be paying something for that service. We did that with the cellular companies. We need to start doing that with the IP companies. So. That's why we're watching this one close.
And as that ties in to the FCC and the landlines, you've kind of got some perspective on that we can get into later.
Okay.
Thank you. The Alliance update, just my notes from going to the Alliance meeting. I will not be able to go to the March meeting, but Kevin's going to be going in my place. That'll be the operations meeting on Tuesday, and then the director's meeting will be on Wednesday in Houston. So thank you, Kevin, for taking that on for me. And I think that's all I have for the executive director's report, unless y'all have any questions for me.
Any questions? Okay, I have one.
Yes, sir.
Under the reports from Allied Organizations Commission on State Emergency Communications, CSET.
Yes, sir.
The Alliance made a presentation to them. The CSET chair voiced that it would appreciate the Alliance's partnership moving forward. Does that mean that CSEC is willing to stand beside the districts in their move to request a change in the 911 fee?
I wish Bill was still here. at this point, that answer is yes at this point.
Okay.
Last month, I included that PowerPoint in your packet, the one that we shared with CSEC, and things are going very well.
Okay. No more questions for that part. Next, we have the TC 911 project updates. First one is Willow Springs,
our new building. So we looked outside, it was a glorious day, which is a very good thing because we've been, some positive and negatives. There's been a lot of foul weather that has been screwing up a lot of the activities that have been attempted out there. Mechanical yards, some of the window work, a lot of things that were not able to be dealt with because of the rains and the extreme cold weather. We're looking this week to kind of pick up on some of that stuff. They're not anticipating, from a construction standpoint, any major delays. It's just there's been a couple of weeks of they haven't been able to get stuff out there to make things happen, specifically on the outside. Inside, things are moving along real well. So we're, for the most part, still on target with things. We're working towards keeping it that way. As we spoke last month, we do have a situation that's been brought up having to do with power and facilities coming into the building. We've been working and had several plans over the past couple of years. We appear to have something that's kind of working that direction right now. We've got Chris Hottie, who's a project manager for the Willow Springs. He's been interacting over the years with Tri-County, been working now with Encore. We also have Encore here, and we appreciate them. So if there's any specific questions, but we wanted to make sure we're all aware, because this particular challenge is the first one that's really put some of our deadlines and dates in jeopardy. But we'll let Chris kind of cover that and continue any other discussions after that.
Okay. Good morning, everybody. Thank you for coming. Chris Hottie, project manager out at Willow Springs. So as Kevin pointed out, really right now, sort of the long pole in the tent of this project is bringing a secondary power feed into the building. And this has been something that we have been working on really in discussions for over a year, but we basically narrowed down providers and made a decision at the very, very beginning of September. And so our engagement has been very intense since that period of time. And I think, just so that you all understand this, I'd like to give you a little bit of context so you understand why we are or where we're at and what our steps are to move forward from this point. So basically, this is a confluence of three major factors, right? And it's a real matrix in terms of putting together how we get this power feed into the building. First has to do with the characteristics of the property itself. As you all know, we have floodplain on that property, and we also have the property crisscrossed by a number of pipelines, which have right-of-ways that accompany those pipelines. Then we have Atmos Energy, who has pipeline that is most proximate to the building that would require a crossing. So because of the date of that pipeline easement, which goes back to the 60s, they have precedence over the crossing. They also, because of the date of that right-of-way, have precedence even over the public utility easement that borders the road. And they have been giving us some mixed signals about what they intend to do with that existing pipeline. Early in the project, when I was doing some discovery work, I found out that they were talking about abandoning that pipeline, which is ideal for the district if they do so. And so we've been trying to cooperate with them to find a different way to come across the property. But they're still wanting to come up basically to the corner of the building, which when we get into right-of-ways, which are 50 feet from one side to the other, we still then have a problem crossing. So moving on to Encore, we've been working with Encore and really got engaged in a meaningful way mid-November on that, when we got a construction manager who was assigned and was really focusing on the work. We've had some good cadence with them in terms of communication, weekly meetings, those sorts of things. And we looked at our best option in conjunction with not only Encore, but our consulting engineers over on the electrical side. Initially, we thought the best option to bring in a secondary feed for diversification was to have another pole-mounted set of transformers. But the service we needed was 500 kVA or a little bit greater. And as we advanced that through Encore, we found out that Encore has pulled back from that as a safety standard, and they are requiring the maximum pole surface to be 300 kVA. So that disqualified that, and we had to move on to another option. Then we looked at locating a pad mounted transformer, which is probably what you're used to seeing for a building, in the parking lot. But then we discovered through the land people at Encore that we would have to have an Atlas crossing. And just to be very frank and very direct, our communications with with Atlas have been strained at best, and we're stalled at the moment right now. We don't want to have that become a requirement to cross them, because we also think that it diminishes our position to negotiate the right location of that pipeline on the property. Okay. So that left us with a third option that we are exploring right now, which we believe is good barring two factors, and that is to pad mount that transformer on the north side of the property. What that requires is a longer run of conduit and a longer run of conductors from those transformers to the disconnect on the building. So there will be some additional cost to the district to do that, but we do not have to cross any pipelines to do that. So that puts that back in the control of the district, which is a very, very good thing. So there are two factors that we have asked our consulting engineer on the civil side to do. One is to guarantee us that there are no objections from FEMA to cross that floodplain, and there are no objections from the city of Fort Worth. As of right now, you know, we were hoping we'd have that answer in advance of this meeting. We don't have it yet. But they are working on doing that. They are telling us that they are not particularly concerned about that, but they are going to give us the confirming answer. We want not only that, but if they have any specifications about how that conduit and conductor traverses the floodplain, what specifications they require, how deep it has to be buried, when it traverses the drainage area that runs from east to west on the property, if it has to be buried or encased. So that's really the only factor that we're waiting for right now. Meanwhile, as you are all aware in our drama, we have a fixed date, and that is to leave this building at some point in time. While there may be a little bit of leeway in that, we are operating as if that is a fixed date, and we cannot modify that. And we have a date to have power into that building at the end of April for a mid-May move-in. That is still our target, and still what we are driving toward, even though that, you know, some of these outstanding factors are not handled, that's in jeopardy, okay? So I want to thank the Encore team for being here. Lee, who handles, he's one of the construction, new construction consultants with Encore, and Nick and Jacob are both designers who've been working with us. So there are things that we can do to accelerate this process by doing some construction work ahead of time. So we're not going to approach this in a serial fashion. we're going to have parallel efforts, hopefully at construction, to get this conduit laid to specification as long as there's no objections, and hopefully make our move-in day. Okay. But I'll have Lee address it here a little bit, but they've basically given us some comfort in saying, look, we understand who you are, what your mission is, and that it's very important that you get in during that time frame. And we're trying, as a team, to claw back as much time as possible. Normally, that construction period, once a project is approved, it goes into the queue, and it's somewhere between 8 and 12 weeks. Lee's committed to say, hey, we will, while we still have too many outstanding questions to give you a date specific, we will do our very best to influence and change the queue to make sure that you get your service when you need it. So, Lee, if there's any commentary that you'd like to make, you know, to the team or anything.
Do y'all have any questions? Like, I feel like you covered it really well. I mean, just point of clarification, it's crossing the Atmos easement. When we spoke to our right-of-way agent, if we were to cross it, or y'all were to cross it, Atmos has the right, because of their date, to tell us or y'all to remove it. We did not want to put that potential conflict on a 911 call center, thus, you know, nixing the original design or two original designs. So we know it's causing more work, but it's better in the long run, if that makes sense.
Right, and that's an absolutely critical point. Yes. Thank you for catching that, because literally service could be interrupted to the building if they had to service that pipeline. Yeah. Right. Either the existing one, or what they're pitching and what they've dug their heels in on right now, which is making basically a U-shape on the property and coming back up to the same corner of the building, which would still have the same conflict with right-of-way. They could turn off power to the building. That's not acceptable to a 911 facility. Okay.
Do we have any idea of the cost of doing this?
Neil, let me have you address that.
Sure. Right now, it's a preliminary quote that we received. It's about $150,000. Again, it's a preliminary. Like Chris mentioned, that we are still in conversations with our topography group so that they can get the approvals, required approvals from FEMA and all those agencies. So, and those that cost will be covered from our contingency, construction contingency, which we have. Right now, so we should be good without getting or obtaining additional approval from the board as of right now.
And to be clear with that, this is one of those parallel efforts that this is a preliminary, so it's premature normally doing this because we don't have full authorization. So we need full with the FEMA that we can do this, but we asked Francis Pittman, can you give us a ballpark figure, get us something so that if they give us a thumbs up, we can get shovels in the ground just as soon as possible. So once again, we are running a lot of different parallel things. Normally not in the right order, we put them in serial. The problem is if we do all these just kind of back to back, it puts us beyond our certificate of occupancy date for move-in. So that's one of the reasons why this is preliminary. We've got an idea about what it's going to cost. We think what they're going to have to do. We think what Frank Spittman's going to have to do. It looks like it's all probable. We're just waiting for the final thumbs up, but we've been trying to work these all, as Chris said, in parallel.
But the FEMA and Fort Worth ask, are those parallel, or are we waiting on FEMA's approval to move that to the Fort Worth review?
It's my understanding those are happening in parallel. Those are two completely separate, you know, mutually exclusive decisions.
Okay. Let us know if you need any help in getting the Fort Worth review done.
And we may well come to you for that.
Thank you.
So any additional questions regarding
that? Well, before we get away from that one, I would consider reaching out to TxDOT, because they've got to have somebody who's talking to the gas company about all the work that's got to be done here, and let that person know that, you know, we really do need your help in having them understand that that approval is part of this project. It's not out there on an island by itself. It impacts a bigger picture that they're responsible for. And telephone calls don't cost any money.
That's right. We've escalated to a certain point there, and once we got to the point, I think where Lee indicated, there's actually, as we go through this, besides it being rough on time, in the grand scheme of things, because no matter what, even with the proposal for Atmos has, we would run a risk of, at this point, if they needed to do work, even after some things happened, we would still be in their right of way, that they would have the ability to disconnect power to the building. So this secondary option is what really drove us that direction away from the Atmos.
And I understand that, but also think that if you get somebody from TxDOT to communicate with Atmos, how important getting this project taken care of impacts this project, it can't hurt.
Doing this new option, we won't have to deal with Atmos at all. So,
but you said it's a dual track process.
It's dual track from the perspective that we want to make sure we don't have any roadblocks with FEMA or the city of Fort Worth to cross that floodplain.
Yeah.
That's
just the plan for crossing Atmos is pretty much off the table.
We've taken that out because it's a variable that we cannot control.
Okay.
The variable isn't, we think we can cross it. The problem is if they start working on that pipeline and they say, Encore, you have to, or customer, you have to remove that wire, we will have to disconnect it from the building, thus taking power away from this call center. That cannot be an option. So that we have to move it to another spot. So moving it to the north and eliminating Atmos crossing, thus now you have your Fort Worth issue and your FEMA issue that need to be resolved.
Okay.
So I hope that.
And I might add too that the places where we could put this pad became smaller and smaller because of the way the building was literally situated on the property. Atmos also has certain right-of-way requirements for their service, right? So we have to have an area big enough to service their right-of-way and their service requirements to be able to get around and get trucks and men and equipment around those transformers. So that's why we wound up sort of with this small island that we could work with.
Any other questions or comments? Okay, then we'll move to the next topic. NG 911 update.
Good morning. Okay, so the first topic, NG 911, that project, we've come across a delay on that, and that's looking at being pushed 2 to 3 weeks.
Thank you, gentlemen.
And the lab milestone thus subsequently also gets pushed 2 to 3 weeks, so we're looking at new opportunities for that. As far as the hardware refresh project, scrap pretty much everything that's here. We have 8 PSAPs that have been moved, and now we have our first official cut where it has been pushed. So Irving backup site was supposed to take place. That is, AT&T is not able to commit to that. Subsequently, all PSAPs after that are also at risk. So I've chatted with Fort Worth and Irving that this is kind of up in the air now that we have pushed the first PSAP cut and committed date. And we have Jared here. If you have anything to speak to, if there's any questions for Jared on that part, and then we'll get into the third topic.
Yeah, I'll just add that, yeah, we have, like Sarah mentioned, run into our first issues, but we have continued to escalate at the highest level at AT&T to meet these dates, and are pushing to make sure we can get back on schedule and not, you know, continue to miss dates. So we're actively working to try to improve upon that, and I know Robert's been involved in those
call
discussions
this
as well.
Yeah, this was hot off the press as of about Friday that we just found out that the PSAP cut for Irving backup is being pushed. It also does impact System 4 cuts. As we were looking at a weak buffer and then moving forward with System 4, it may subsequently push all those. So that kind of ties into a woven discussion. I know.
Before you leave that.
Yes, sir.
What's the issue?
Do we want to have AT&T speak to the issue?
So they missed a provisioning date on the CAMA trunks for one of the events. I talked to the project team about that.
And the reason why they missed
I don't have a lot of clarity on that. It became a manpower issue is about the best I've gotten. That was a conversation I had on Friday. I left a message with the actual director for that team this morning to add to, I haven't gotten a response yet since I got in here, but I asked him to lay out what they're going to do over the next 2 months for us, 3 months, make sure that we have the manpower to do the work. And I had a couple other things that I brought to the attention that I wanted to do. Those are the two biggest sites. I didn't get, we said, what did we ask? I guess they had originally asked to move it to the 6th and 7th, was that correct? Of March? From, it was supposed to be the 25th, right? Tomorrow was the first one. What due date did I miss?
Tomorrow was supposed to be one of them. If we want to get into particulars of dates, we'll have to go in executive session.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, it sounds like there's about three people that can do this work. Many vacations and things are getting in the way of it, is what it sounds like.
But this is the first out of the series that we've had where AT&T made the commitment back in December, but now they are not able to keep that pace going.
And this is not the first time that's happened.
We didn't miss any other day.
And when this comes up, well, when we first started down this path years ago, the question was asked, will AT&T support the district in the move? Yes. At that time, there was no comments about, well, we may be losing staff or we may be having a hard time. So when I hear that it has the attention at the highest level of AT&T,
yes, sir.
But it continues to happen, I don't feel good that the highest levels of AT&T understand what's going on.
I will make that clear.
I appreciate you being on that call last week.
Yeah, sure. I'm locked into this as much as anybody else.
Go
ahead.
What is the final date that we need all these cutovers to happen before we move?
We need the rest of System 3 cutover by move out of this building. But it also has implications as to once we're finished with that, we go to the other system, and then we go right into the next gen project. So it all has a domino effect.
Actually, yeah, it's not by when we have to move out, because we have to move all the PSAPs off. Then we have to do some additional network rearrangement to take this location out of that network mix.
Right.
So there's really a lot of post work once we just get done with the residual PSAPs on the schedule for System 3. We have an entirely different team that has to come in and put some level of effort forth before this building goes away. So there's, to Sarah's point, there's a very tightly woven tapestry of different activities and initiatives that are all dependent upon each other. So when certain things start sliding and slipping, it has a drastic downstream effect.
So speaking of the sliding and slipping and back to AT&T, is there any SLAs that we can hold to account in our contract with AT&T for service delivery?
Not for
this. Those specifics.
Yeah, these are orders that were placed, and what we're now looking at is the commitment that AT&T made to us for these are the dates that we're going to have that have now been missed. So that we certainly have escalated. We've got Jared and his team involved. We've got Mr. Brooks actively involved in this. So we've got a variety of different prongs we're trying to help keep this on the rails.
Also tightly interwoven is the effort for Fort Worth that needs to be done by June 1. I heard last week that that's also a risk by assigning an AT&T PM. They're so taxed with the current workload that we may not be able to get a project manager that then lines up Motorola and all the tasks that need to take place for the June 1 deadline. We are still working on that and working with AT&T on that, looking at alternative solutions, but that is also...
Who are you working with? I haven't heard about it. Who are you working with on that?
Jared, we had a call with Motorola, with AT&T. And we just officially, I think, got word from Fort Worth on Thursday that they have a plan. So this is a new discovery and concrete that something needs to happen.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, and I discussed with Sarah, but to your point, there's a large backlog. 100 plus projects in the project management queue for AT&T, and so when we get the scope of work from Tarrant County, you know, to do this work, we submit a request to get a project manager assigned, and and sometimes that can take months to happen. We can escalate it. There's also a lot of already escalations on that list, so we'll do all we can to get one assigned. If we can't, we can work with Motorola to see if they can get project managers assigned. In the worst case, we don't have one. We'll just collectively tackle it as a team, but we really, you know, prefer to have projects like this have a project manager assigned from both the AT&T side and Motorola side.
We've essentially said no is not an answer. Let's find a way to say yes, or what can we do?
Agree.
Okay.
Sarah has been very adamant these calls.
Sure. Thank you.
And I appreciate that, but don't leave anything off the table.
We're looking at alternative solutions.
We're not talking about something today, but there's got to be somebody out there that's retired AT&T that would like to come back for a specific project as a consultant. And I think we ought to be calling the union hall and saying, if you have somebody, we would be willing to give them access to the systems they need to get us back on track. And then I have one other question to piggyback off.
For that one, we have actually floated that past AT&T, and that's something that I looked into, but we're not able to find anybody that was fitting the category that would be interested in returning.
Who they talked to at the union hall?
That I don't know, but we did approach AT&T with that option.
Then you didn't approach them right. There's got to be somebody out there, and either
there's
HR.
Some compelling things playing into that. Not from our ability to request. A matter of they making decisions not to come because of some events in the future. So.
Then let's bump up the pay offer. Everybody says no at $20 an hour. It gets different when you get to $50, $100 an hour. Just saying. And then second question, when does our master services agreement with AT&T expire?
Hey.
It's ongoing.
Well, the master services agreement is an ongoing, I don't believe it has a termination date to it.
I bet it does.
Okay, I'll do that.
Because that's
we have several contracts underneath that one.
Understand, but the question that Ms. Insko asked is, do we have any SLAs? And that would probably be in the general tariffs. But if those aren't working for us, then specifically the master services agreement is where we get the commitments that we need to be successful. So if there is a date when that expires, that needs to be part of the discussion. That's all I got to say about that. Anybody else got anything to say? Questions? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Be sure next February you bring us a little bit more love than this.
I'm trying to bring all I can.
Bad news bear all of it.
Okay, go to the next topic, the annual audit report presentation. Number A, the annual audit report presentation.
Good morning, everyone. You have two packets, your board packets in your. The first one is the annual comprehensive financial report, which is our annual regular report. And the other one is the single audit report, which is for the grant that we received from CSEC. So we have Mr. Zamora from Taylor Brown and Hill, our audit firm, and he will be talking about and presenting the reports to the board. Thank you.
Is everybody doing all right this morning?
Yeah, thank you.
Enjoying this beautiful weather. It's a lot better than the cold we were getting last week. Even down in Waco, it was about 2 degrees, and I was ready to be done with it. But like Neil said, you do have two reports in front of you. First, I'll be going over the ACFR, which is the bigger one. That comprehensive financial report goes over activities in the government-wise, but then the general fund, which is the only fund that the district has. So it makes it pretty simple. But the whole foundation of what we do is we offer our opinions on these financials and determine whether they are clean or not, essentially. But luckily, with Anil's help and his team and the whole district come together, and there was a clean opinion on this report. So job well done, and don't expect any changes in the future, because what we've noticed is that this team does a really good job of keeping everything together, meeting all the tested controls, passing all of those, and as well as the tested compliances. But of course, that goes into the overarching work that y'all do here. We know how important it is that these functions are working daily, not only on the technology side, but on the financial side as well. So again, credit to Anil and the team here that do behind scenes work that we just come in at the end and review everything. But I did want to point out, y'all were mentioning the building. Of course, that's a big talking point right now. And so there was some mentioning about some of the extra funds that might be needed or intended for some of the extra purchases, things that might be needed after some of the completion has been done. If you turn over to page 9, this is essentially what we refer to in the governmental accounting world as like an income statement. And it pretty much what it has is the expenses and revenues, but there's different ways of accounting for it when it comes to governmental accounting. But essentially what I wanted to point out was that you'll see that your total expenditures there on the far right of $16 million, that's for FY24, so that's a whole year. And then the ending fund balance on the very bottom of that same page, $37.5 million, that's pretty much y'all's reserve that y'all have in ending fund balance. So y'all can see that y'all have well worth of more than 2 years of fund balance. So in case y'all have any other expenditures that y'all might need to use on this building or anything else comes up, the district will be in a good financial position. Some places don't even have a few months worth. So it's a good credit to the work that y'all do, and also the program fees that keep on coming in for the 911 calls. But next, I'll go into the single audit report. So if you open up that page, that is page number 3. Like Anil said, there was, obviously everybody knows about ARPA, which is the American Rescue Plan Act. A lot of that money came down the pipelines to the different local governments, to city, counties, and to 911 districts as well. And so specifically for 911 districts, it came through CSET. But that money, essentially what it does, it comes up as a single audit report. And the reason that we have to complete these single audits is because you're spending more than $750,000 of federal monies or federal awards. And so there's a specific test that we have to perform, obligations and compliance standards that y'all have to meet. And we actually tested 100% of those funds, which is $1.6 million, for the what we call ARPA. And it was a clean opinion as well. And so the work that was done by, again, Anil and his team and everyone here really spoke to how well, because not a lot of places we complete 100% of the test. We don't test every single dollar, but here we did. And there was a clean opinion, and it was really a testament to how well the work is done here. I did also want to point out on page 7, in total, this year for FY24, the district had operating grants and contributions revenue of about $11.7 million. I wanted to explain the reconciliation down there at the bottom. You'll see that $11.7 million there at the top, but then you also see at the very bottom is that $1.6 million that the district spent in ARPA expenditures. But then in between there, you see two different types of revenue, and one of those is Prop 8. The reason that this one doesn't show up on the CEPA is because it doesn't have strings attached to any federal or state awards. So that's the reason that you won't see it on any single audit report. And that's across the state. There is no differences specifically for this district. And then the intergovernmental cost reimbursement that you see right there at the bottom, about $26,000, that comes from the reimbursement for the building. Those funds are slowly trickling in. They aren't coming in fast, and as we all know, sometimes the government can take their time, especially specific departments, with giving the funds to the appropriate personnel. So That's pretty much the gist of it. Like I said, clean opinion, really a job well done by Neil and his team. And there were no specific areas that we could even speak to say that something wasn't done correctly or there was funds not put in the right place or anything of that nature. So with that, I'll open up for any questions.
Any questions?
No question, but a comment. Just kudos comments to this team again for another wonderful year of financial reporting that keeps us above reproach. Thank you.
All right. Awesome. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Both of those. Now we'll go to purchases over $150,000. The first one is RN25016, Willow Springs Intercom System.
Hello, good morning, everybody. Actually, I'm going to turn your focus to 25016 and 25017 together. They represent an aggregate amount of $158,898.06. The district staff felt it was appropriate to make the board aware that these purchases are combined for security, but in addition to that, they are also being paid to Johnson Controls for access control and for the new building's intercom, video intercom system. Again, the purchases are kind of under the radar of security. We anticipate this being grant eligible, and we also have an existing contract with Johnson Controls for access controls at the RBU South location as well. And so these systems will, while they're separate contracts, they all kind of have to work together and work with our existing system to keep them all aligned.
Any questions, comments? Since he presented them both together, can we make one vote? If the motion so reflects?
Your vote is clear that it's for both items, yes.
Okay, do I hear a motion to approve RN25016 and RN25017?
I make a motion to approve.
Thank you, Ms. Insko.
Second.
Thank you, Chief. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? She raised her hand. Okay. Motion passes unanimously. With that being said, pursuant to Chapter 55, what?
One more.
No, you said that one's going to be done on March.
It's the board resolution 028.
Bottom.
You want to do that before we go?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Last one.
I understand, but it's supposed to be a closed session item, so.
Not this. This is just new policy.
Okay, my mistake. We'll now go to board resolution RN25-021, new personnel policy, internship program policy.
Good morning, everyone. In your package, you should see a copy of the internship program policy. This is a policy that we have drafted. We would like to have the ability to employ interns. The requirement is that they obviously be attending college or university. The internship, we have the option of having it with pay or without pay. Typically, we prefer to provide compensation to the intern. But we think this will be a valuable program for any college student to learn about a public sector entity, especially one such as ours. Tarrant County 911 District. I think we have a lot to offer our candidates where they can learn a lot pretty much about the district, what we do, and maybe in the end it can lead to potential permanent position for an intern if they have an interest, if we have an opening as well, and go with the last. So we, staff is recommending that you approve this policy.
Any questions or comments? This is a good program, good idea. I think you ought to keep an open mind for subsequent years, expanding this past juniors and seniors and graduate students in college.
Yes.
Because as the district itself grows, there's a lot of smart kids that are 18 years old coming out of high school that we could do a little bit of a grow our own process. So with that being said, do I hear a motion to approve?
Motion to approve.
Motion second. Made by Chief Aldridge. Second.
Second.
Ms. Inco. Insco.
Thank you.
All approve?
Aye.
Aye.
She raised.
All opposed? Passes unanimously. Now can I do it? Okay. At 10:56, pursuant to Chapter 551, Texas Government Code, the district reserves the right to convene an executive session as deemed necessary during this meeting, and Section 551.074, Personnel Matters, deliberation regarding the appointment, employment evaluation, reassignment duties, discipline, or dismissal of a public officer or employee.
Mr. Brunson, could you also please read 551.071?
Which one?
071.
Okay, consultations. Also, Section 551.071, consultation with attorney.
Okay, that works. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Okay, I'm hopping over to the executive session, Elena. If you can hop over to that soon, please.
Recording stopped.
Eleven a.m. We are calling the board, Texas Board of the Texas Terry County 911 back into session. No items outside of the additional items. So do we have any public comments? Okay, then I would mention to the public that as a board, we are required to have a public hearing every 3 years to discuss whether or not we continue the district, whether we still use the same funding source. That will be at next month's meeting. So I'm encouraging the public, if there's information that you want to input, or if there's something else about the 911 district that you would like to provide input on, you're more than welcome and we'll be happy to listen to you. With that being said, I call this meeting to adjourn at 11:12.